You are listening to Roll the Quadcast, a Blogger So Deer podcast where little old Charlie Brown is still trying to kick that football. Blogger So Deer is the go-to website for the best independent analysis of Wake Forest athletics.
Welcome to episode 21 of Roll the Quadcast. I'm Rob Reinhardt, joined as always by my wonderful co-host Riley Johnston, recording this here on Sunday, February 16th. 2014. Riley, it's our 21st episode. Old enough to drink on the podcast. I think we're going to need to after that game last night.
Yeah, I don't think we have an option based on what I've witnessed recently. So, we shall.
Before we get into last night's roller coaster of a game, let's talk about the state game on Tuesday night. Feels like a while ago now, but state brought home the victory 82-67 after a fairly competitive first half, definitely high scoring. Riley, any main takeaways from that game?
Yeah, T.J. Warren is one of the better players in the country. And, according to Jeff...
You wouldn't know that according to our apparent scouting report. I don't think he came up.
Right, and in the past, Jeff Patel, like I said, you know, the farther along you get into the season, the harder it is to score because teams have scouted you. Well, apparently we didn't do any scouting at all because T.J. Warren lit us up for 34 points on a whopping 26 shots from the field. So that's usually not a very good recipe for success. He had 34 points, 10 rebounds. Most of the night he was guarded by Travis McKay or we were in the zone, and he just got every shot off when he wanted it, where he wanted it, how he wanted it, and that's how you get 34 points. You can't leave a guy like T.J. Warren open.
And it took him just one free throw to do it.
Yeah, he went 1 out of 2 from the line, and he was very effective from the field, 12 for 21 on twos, 3 of 5 from threes. When you allow a guy to shoot the ball 26 times and you're as good a shooter as T.J. Warren is, then he's going to light you up, and he did. So that was one of the big differences in the game as NC State cruised in the second half to an 82-67 victory.
Yeah, it's not like he's one of these sneaky good players. You know, you and I talk about a lot of tempo-free statistics, advanced statistics like offensive rating, which his was a very impressive 135 on the evening. He's the ACC's leading scorer, so that's about as fundamental of a statistic as you're going to get in points per game. And, McDonald's All-American coming out of high school, a very very good player for last year's team on a fairly loaded team. And this year he's been excellent. Definitely one of the more underrated players in the conference, although, or at least talked about, and one of the more underrated players in the country for sure. He torched us. Nothing else to really say about that except for we continue to get beat on the glass, although not in as convincing of a fashion. They had 13 offensive rebounds compared to our 11. They had 23 defensive rebounds compared to our 20.
We went 14 of 31 from the free throw line. Travis and Devin went a combined 3 of 14, and it could have been worse. Our walk-on Trent Mainhorn scored 3 out of 4 free throws in the final minute, so we were 11 of 27 before that.
That kid can kind of ball a little bit. And you know what? I talked about this briefly in my recap. I'm glad you brought up the walk-on Trent Van Horn. I talked about this briefly in my recap of the game where I talked about how NC State dismantled Wake Forest, which they did. And that game was nowhere near close towards the end. They won by 15. Mark Gottfried, good for him. He put in all 5 of his walk-ons with a minute to play, the absolute appropriate time to do so. We just put in one walk-on with 4 scholarship players. Now, those 4 scholarship players, I forget exactly who they were. I think Karan, Tree, maybe Andre was out there, but that's irrelevant. With this one walk-on, Trent Van Horn, and good for Trent Van Horn for doing what he did, made 3 free throws, great opportunity for him, but put in the rest of the guys, reward them for their hard work. The game's out of line. Our players aren't getting any better going against their 5 walk-ons at that point. You're just embarrassing them. Give the kids an opportunity to play. Jeff Bezdella, I'm not going to criticize it. Obviously, it's not the worst thing he does. No, it's on a long list, but
slightly above blaming the fan for all the problems.
But I mean, if you want these kids to respect you and work hard, then give them the opportunity to play when it's appropriate. Obviously, I don't expect to have them start the Duke game on senior night, or I don't expect them to play 15 minutes a game. But
based on what I've seen, it wouldn't necessarily hurt them to put in the wall.
But you know, it's a slight aside, but I'm sorry, it's, you know, a little soapbox for me to say, put in those kids for working hard in practice and help making our guys better. And that's just something I disagree with that I don't think he does a good job of. So that's my rant on walk-ons. Riley, any other thoughts on the game?
Yeah, I mean, we looked okay early on. We hit some threes early. We had five different guys make threes. Aaron Roundtree made a three, so that was nice to see.
Roundtree.
Yeah, Aaron Roundtree living up to his name. We thought briefly Miles Overton might be out for the season with a leg injury, but that turned out to be a bit premature as he played in the last two games. So.
Cumbie being Dumbie. That's what I keep tagging on the boards. I keep somehow lucking out and being right, although I was a little over-presumptuous on that, but obviously thrilled to see he's still healthy.
Yeah, there's not a lot to say. With another road loss, Jeff Pozdelic now sits at 2-29 in ACC road.
Hey, he was only 2-28 after that game. That's not...
No, he went 2-29. We played FSU.
Might as well. Goodness gracious, I'm an idiot. Go on.
But anyway,
29.
No real thoughts about the Wake NC State game. We've got it was really an expected loss. It's on the road. We chalk it up. It's an L. But the game last night was probably the one that hurt more than maybe any this year other than the Georgia Tech game. So what are your initial thoughts on the Florida State game last night? You were there. I missed it. I wasn't there. I was down in Charlotte taking care of some business and yeah, what'd you think, Rob?
Well, you know, you can always write that trip off as a business expense. That's great, but it was a great first 12 minutes or so. We were up 24-8 at the 8:16 mark remaining in the first half when Tyler Cavanaugh made a three, and really we were making shots. And this is one of the frustrating parts about our offense that we'll talk about. And is our offense is only good when we're making shots. And I know that sounds idiotic and maybe, you know, oversimplified and things like that, but if you watch good offenses, they are good not regardless of whether or not they make shots, but they move the ball around in a way that gets them closer shots that make the shots easier. And when they in threes fall, it's sort of just gravy for them. You know, we were overly reliant on jump shots, which we made to start the game, but we're not a good jump shooting team, and we regressed to the mean in the worst of ways, and, you know, we saw what happened.
Yeah, and I mean, going off that, we don't get easy layups. We had maybe two or three from what I can think of, and when you shoot jump shots and you don't rebound the ball very well, and we don't rebound the ball well at all. We had 9 offensive rebounds, which is at 25%, which is...
We had the lowest, second lowest offensive rebounding percentage in conference play.
Right, and I mean...
And
so
that, we are worst at defensive rebounding.
Yeah, I mean, we're really bad at rebounding, and rebounding is honestly one of the things that is I just don't understand, because that's a lot of effort, that's a lot of, I mean, fundamentals, and I mean, if you can't rebound the basketball, you're not a very good team. I mean, I know some teams say, no good coach says that. No coach says we're just going to scrap rebounding. I mean, they don't.
Yeah, you don't chalk it up unless this is where, again, our early schedule was misleading.
Yes.
Because if you look at the KenPom statistics, we are currently 228th in the nation in, maybe I have my numbers reversed. We're 228th in the nation in defensive rebounding, and we're 188th in offensive rebounding. One of those two statistics, and forgive me for forgetting, we were number 9 nationally in the country.
I think it was defensive rebounding percentage. Yeah. When we played St. Bonaventure, they were 4th in offensive. We were 9th in defense.
Okay, yeah. So. Okay, yeah, that's what I was leaning towards. But the point is, we've dropped substantially, regardless of which one that is, and we think it's even more because it was defensive. And now you're starting to see when the competition comes in, we're not just faster and more athletic and taller than these teams. We're actually none of those things against any of these teams. And when you combine that with poor fundamental rebounding position and boxing out,
you're not going to get the basketball. It's just that simple.
Yeah, and I mean, when you're less athletic and you don't try as hard as the other team, then you're going to get out-rebounded, and that's what happened. We don't have good fundamentals. Our effort inside, on the most part, is abysmal. We're in really bad positioning.
And, you know, effort may be the wrong word, but our strategy on whether or not to go for the rebound seems to be
the
question.
I don't know. I mean, I say effort because I just say there was a shot. I'm not singling. I mean, I am singling him out.
Well, nobody has ever fallen our shot in the history.
Aaron Thomas, I think, for FSU, took a shot from the corner. He knew it was short. Travis McKay standing right there on the baseline. All he has to do is slide to the left or put an arm out. Aaron Thomas just ran right by him, grabbed it, and laid it back in. I mean, and that kind of stuff happens way too often. And Florida State's a very tall team. They got 7'3", 7'1", 6'9", 6'9", 6'8", 6'7". But that doesn't mean you can just completely abandon
numbers are only but so impressive,
right.
Actually.
And so, kind of going back to the offensive thing, the five-out offense, it gets one down, four up, however we were doing it when Devin was in the game, and then when he was not in the game, thanks to his technical, we kind of went to a complete five-out. That's fine when you're making shots, but the five-out offense is
and at least cutting.
Right, the five-out is more than just chucking threes. It's doing backdoor cut, setting screens, running a weave-type offense, stretching out the lane and driving. I mean, you can't just pass it and then expect to just shoot wide open three to make it, especially when your offense that you're predicating your entire game around is based on the fact that you're a 32% three-point shooting team.
And that's exactly correct. I mean, if you are just not just standing on around the perimeter, but for the most part just floating around the perimeter, if you have a lot of knockdown shooters, like Duke, for example, they could afford to do that, but they move without the ball a lot better than we do.
They have purpose with the ball.
But, you know, if you're a team that has multiple high 30%, low 40% three-point shooters, you can get away with that because you can stretch the defense that much with your ability to knock down shoot. But if you check the scouting report, I mean, we only have but a handful of guys, if that, that you have to defend from the perimeter. And when we go with certain lineups, that number is even, you know, further reduced. So,
yeah, I mean, just kind of off the top of my head, and I don't know the statistic, you know, down pat, but I mean, Karan's probably right around 38-39%, getting it pulled up here. Looks like he's 37% threes. Miles is 33%. Travis is 32%. I mean, it's not good, and we're basing our entire offense around three-point shooters that the best shooter is 37%, and everybody else is under 33% except for Madison Jones, who's
hey,
two
he's
for
a
five.
Solid 40%.
Yeah, he's 2 for 5. So,
oh, okay.
You're right. So, it's just, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And I mean, I know that Jeff Petzelic's offense is in the past. If you kind of look at what his thing is that he does, he shoots a lot of threes and he doesn't rebound the ball. It's fine if you're playing in the Mountain West. It's not okay if you're playing in the ACC. And it's,
Yeah, I mean, and it's okay if you're knocking down shots to a degree. I mean, his first year at Air Force, his teams were 6th nationally in three-point percentage and 19th nationally in three-point percentage. His second year, they were finished 1st and 2nd in effective field goal percentage in the country. But 330th and 332nd in offensive rebounding percentage. I mean, he's consistent. I mean, these are just numbers, 330, 332, 323, 342, 341, 321, 321, 294, and then 198 this year, but that number is trending down, so we'll see where it is at the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a theme, and that's a strategy.
Yeah, and you know what?
Losing strategy.
Right.
It's
and
a strategy.
Teams take on what the coach brings to the table, and I think that the lack of rebounding, the lack of hustle, lack of effort, I mean, that is a direct reflection upon the coach. You see a team like, I mean, a lot of teams that take on what their coach does. Leonard Hamilton, he's a tough-nosed guy. Florida,
that's
how
they play.
They play tough defense. They crash the board. They box out. They do the little things well. We don't do any of the little things well, from what I can tell. And, I mean, it should...
We don't do any of the big things.
Right, and it should... we've lost five games in a row. It looks like we're probably going to lose six, seven in a row. But I thought one of the turning points last night after the hot start, aside from the really lack of offensive production, aside from the perimeter, was the Devin Thomas technical foul.
That's obviously a major landmark, I guess, if you want, or turning point in the game.
Right, and I'm not trying to scapegoat him for the loss by any means. It's just one of those things that you're looking to in the run. The run had already started a little bit, but you know, things really snowballed down from there. He had one foul. He picked up the personal, which
was his second.
Right.
Which and was a questionable foul.
It was, but I could see why it was a foul. He kind of came over the top, and then he jumped, very theatrical, right in front of Jamie Lucky, who was pretty quick on the trigger, as we've seen in the past.
He pulled it.
And Devin Thomas already has a bad reputation with the refs, and I think if it had been maybe Cody, for example. I mean,
almost anyone else.
Yes, then it would have been perhaps not a technical. I don't fault Jamie Lucky for giving it. I fault Devin Thomas for putting himself in that position. But at that point, he has three fouls. We bring in Andre Washington. And the thing that I really disliked was Andre Washington goes in there. He played hard. He does play hard.
There's no doubt about that.
He went up and he got one of his shots blocked. And after with the he rebounded a miss and went back up. They flashed to Devin Thomas on the bench, and he's just laughing into his towel, saying something to the guy sitting next to him. I mean, that's inexcusable.
Well, I did not.
This was less.
You would.
Yeah, I watched the game
on
TV, right? And I mean, even I think the announcer made a comment about like, well, I wouldn't be laughing or something like that.
Well,
I
certainly wouldn't.
Right, and that made me irate. I mean, you just picked up your third foul. You're stopping the momentum that your team had. Your team's been playing well, and we don't really have another valuable.
Your teammate's getting I don't mean embarrassed in a bad way, but it's embarrassing when you get your shot blocked. I mean, it happens to everybody.
Yeah.
LeBron James has gotten dunked on. That's embarrassing. Doesn't mean you're a bad player.
Right, and I mean, especially after he made a hustle play to get the rebound and put it back up.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I'm not ever going to laugh anybody for that, but especially after you've gone to the bench for something that was easily.
That's a mental mistake.
Yeah,
it's a mental mistake.
Right, and that's inexcusable, and that doesn't look good. I mean, looks like a bad teammate, and I mean, I don't know anything about the team camaraderie.
But if we're talking about that specific instance, that's something a bad teammate would do. Yeah. That was an example of being a bad teammate.
And what is he laughing about? We've lost four games in a row. He's been abysmal. And I mean, I'm not trying to call him out and say that he's a bad egg, but I mean, that's not exactly the type of culture we're trying to instill here, especially given some of the things we've talked about in the past, given his lack of respect to the opposing players, teams, and his own players. I mean, that's the guy that I could do without. And I know he's a young guy, and he does have a lot to bring to the table. But, I mean, you got to grow up. And I know he's 20, but the other guys on the team aren't acting like that. I see them trying hard
and they're
play.
Also 20.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of an aside. But I thought that was the turning point. And we weren't being effective inside. We didn't even try to get post touches, which to a point I understand because they're so tall, but I mean you can't just abandon the game completely just because we have a 7-footer.
You at least got to get touches and then hope maybe draw a double team or the defense to collapse a little bit so you can maybe hit a cutter or a 3-point shooter spying up so you get a better look. But yeah, the score was 26-12 at the 5:41 mark when Devin Thomas received the personal and follow up technical. They went. Florida State won on an 11-3 run to finish the remainder of the half. Then from the start of the second half to the first media timeout, they won on a 9-4 run. Over from that media timeout to the next one, it was a 7-4 run. And from that media timeout to the next one, it was an 11-4 run, which all in all was a 38-15 run from the 5:41 mark of the first half to the 7:19 mark of the second.
Now, if you take out that run, we're right there.
Yeah, we would have won.
Yeah,
you know, I didn't hear all of his press game comments, but
I'm sure he didn't say that last night. But of course, this was referencing back to a couple of years
the state game.
I think it was state where he said, "Hey, if you take out that, what was it, 18-0." Run.
They had multiple large runs against us.
Right. Hey, if you take out those 30 points that they scored in a row,
we're right there
to win the game. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, you know,
if
you took that out, we would be. But anyway, we took the loss. We're now 5-10 against KenPom top 100 teams this year, which I haven't looked the past 2 years. I'm guessing that's head and shoulders better than the other one. I was actually surprised we won five games against the top 100.
I'm sure they were close to the 90s.
Yeah, some of them were. Most of them were. But so anyway, we move on. Those are bad losses. And
Riley, bring up those. Do you have those? We talked about bad starts to the second half. Do you have those numbers in front of you?
Yeah, so I get this from actually the Wake Forest message board. People have been talking about it a lot. It's from username B Holiday, two L's. Don't know who it is. He has two posts on the board, so I assume he was just
long time lurker, first time poster.
It's a hit and run. He don't want to straight up love me forever. But he actually did the math there. During the season, he excluded the first five games, which for statistical,
I don't blame him.
Right, for statistical purposes, you can say why
outlier opponents.
And, right, and it is a little bit of cherry picking to an extent. But it's teams that are not ranked 345th in KenPom, which
the Citadel's up to a solid 350 right now.
Yeah, so we played 19 games this season against teams that aren't bunnies or complete bunnies, I guess. To the first time out, what he did was break it down. So you come out of the start of the second half, and then the first time out, regardless of whether it's media, Wake Forest calling it, an opposing coach calling it. So of those 19 games, Wake has lost, or excuse me, had more points five times, lost, given up more points 13 times, and then been tied once against Pittsburgh. So that's a nice tie. So we're 5-13-1 up to the first time out in the second half. And, you know, we kind of laugh about how Jeff Bezdelic gets manhandled out of the half. And, you know, it's hashtag Bezdelic machine gun timeout. So, but the stats kind of back it up. And when it comes down to who took the first timeout, there were 11 media timeouts. Wake had 6, and then the opponents had 2. So, especially in the last few games, State -4, and this was before the Florida State game, and I think so it's really 5-14-1 because Florida State came out and scored
they beat us by five. Well, four. I guess six or four before we called the timeout.
So four, they had four straight points. So down by 4 to Florida State, 4 to State, 1 to Duke, 6 to Georgia Tech, 3 to the media, 3 to Syracuse, 4 to Notre Dame, -2 to Virginia Tech, -4 to Clemson. That's 8 straight games that we've been outscored by at least 1 point in the first block of the second half. That's inexcusable. I mean, that's horrendous. And it's just over and over again it plays out like that. And during that span, we've called a timeout in 5 of those 8 games first, and it looks like they've all come in the first 3 minutes of the second half. I mean, that's inexcusable. And it's just that right there shows how bad of a job Jeff Bezdelic has done at making adjustments. I mean,
that's what the halftime's used for. Players get to rest, and the coaches tell them what to do differently in the second half.
And to be fair, some of those are good coaches. Coach K, Jim Boeheim, I've heard of those guys. Mike Bray.
I think they're in the Hall of Fame.
He's okay.
Mike Bray is a fine coach.
Brad Brownell, pretty good. James Johnson for Virginia Tech, probably not that good, but we still lost. Brian Gregory, mediocre. Mark Godfrey, I don't think he's very good, but especially
I think he's doing a very good job this year.
He's okay. Mediocre at best. But, I mean, that's embarrassing. And I think that kind of in a nutshell shows how bad we have been at making adjustments. And that's kind of directly on the coach. You come out of half, he's had 15 minutes to talk to his guys. Now,
not only that, in addition to those 15 minutes, he's had the full 20 minutes game time minutes to evaluate what's going on.
Yeah,
and then 15 minutes just to tell them what to do. So, you know, he's had, you know, about an hour in real time to
assess
what's going on and then try and implement and direct his players with what to do.
Right. So overall, throughout the season, we've in the second half of the first stoppage of play, we have been outscored by an average of 2.3 points, which doesn't sound like a lot, but I mean, when you could be going up by even one basket and then a timeout gives you a +2 advantage, and we've been -2.3 on average this entire season. I bet probably about the same the last 2 or 3 years. I mean, that's really bad. So that's just kind of an aside, but a statistical, I would say, abnormality, but it's not an abnormality. It's just a trend at this juncture.
It's a trend, and
yeah, that's not good.
It's certainly not. Now, Riley, obviously, we lost on Saturday night in a game I thought was on the road, even though I was there in person. So I don't know what that tells you about my
it was a road game,
my brain power. But let's talk about this subject of not necessarily rooting for Wake Forest. Let's talk about this subject of sort of this, I guess I'm articulating my thoughts very well right now, this sort of battle of rooting for, of short-term versus long-term. And the short-term meaning the immediate game, it's great to win, it feels good to win, but in the long-term, would it be better for the program if we lost these games? I mean, Riley, what are your thoughts on that? Just have at it.
Well, I mean, it's hard to assess it because we don't know what it's going to take to get Jeff Pozdelic fired. If I knew that Ron Wallman was going to fire him based on his body of work up to this point, then I'd say, sure, win the next five games, six games, win the ACC championship, because that's not going to save his job at this point. But we don't know what he's judging on. Okay, that was a hyperbole. If he won the ACC title,
yes,
then he would probably be extended.
I would say he would even deserve it.
Fine. That if that ever happened, we could always talk about it. But he's not going to.
Yeah.
And so last night, you know, I made a couple of posts after the game or a tweet after the game that kind of said, you know, it does suck that we lost the game, but overall in the long run, I think it's better for the program because it's one loss closer to Jeff Pozdelic being out the door. I mean, putting it bluntly. And we don't know what it's going to take to get him fired. For all we know, Ron Wallman could have already told him this is it, and he's out looking for other candidates. But I keep seeing things from local media and state media, and you know, Dan Collins has said, you know, this could be a loss that really puts the feather in the hat. And you know, when the fans then say, "Oh well, yeah, I mean, that's why it was good. It's good that we didn't win the game. If you don't want Jeff Pozdelic going forward," then they're like, "Oh well, how bad a fan are you?" Well, and you just said before that if this could be the game that does it for him. If we won, does that mean we're going to make a referendum on the next game?
Yeah.
Every game can't be a referendum on the coach. You have to look at the body of work. And sure, if the loss last night was the one where Ron Wallman said, "Dang, we blew a 16-point lead to Florida State on February 15th. I think that's going to do it." Then sure, I don't mind saying that, yeah, fine, I'm pulling for us not to win that game if it means another year of Jeff Pozdelic.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And that doesn't make me a bad fan, in my opinion. I don't have any effect on the game, believe it or not. No matter how much I yell at the TV, they can't hear me.
Yeah,
I don't play for Wake.
It is interesting. I used to think, I didn't think much of the people who rooted against Wake Forest and was rooting for Wake Forest to lose. I'm somewhat coming around to their opinion now. I don't think I have any impact on the game of how hard I root for or against them. The only way I could have an impact on the game would be, you know, financial contributions or whatever that would lead to improvement in facilities or whatnot. But it's sort of an interesting point. It's somewhat like the NBA lottery. To a degree, we talk about a lot of this, you know, being sorry for Jabari with Jabari Parker coming out, which was rigging for Wiggins. And in the NBA, you know, you sort, some of those teams are rooting to lose in order to increase their chances at getting a higher draft pick and getting a potential star in the future, which is the opposite of college sports because in college sports, if you look at the rankings from year to year, I mean, it's sort of the rich get richer. I mean, Duke has a good year, then Duke will get a good recruiting class, then Duke will have another good year. Same with Kentucky, and then you can look at that across all sports. So it's interesting in college where you think, well, why would it be good if we lost? However, you know, this is one of the things I was thinking about today. Let's say Jeff Pozdelic is replaced. The record Wake Forest has had in the past several years sort of goes away.
Nobody cares.
I mean, I was thinking about it with Dave Clawson and the great job he did recruiting this past winter and this past offseason. You know, when he's recruiting to Wake Forest, he did not have a 4-8 record last year. He did not have a 5-7 record the year before. He can say, "I won a MAC championship last year. I've turned Fordham around. I've turned Richmond around. I've turned Bowling Green around." You know, whoever the next coach is, and hopefully we have a new coach within 2 months from today. You know, you get all the perks of Wake Forest without really any of the downsides. Yeah, Wake Forest went whatever we'll go this year. Currently, we're projected to go 16-15, 6-12 in KenPom. Personally, I think that's slightly high. I would be more likely to say 15-16, and then 5-13. But you know, regardless, you bring in the new coach, you get the positives of Wake Forest, but you get his record, so it really doesn't matter that Wake is losing this year. It can only be a plus that we're losing if it gets rid of Buzdelic. I'm not rooting for us to lose, but I wasn't terribly disappointed last time.
Right.
That was the first time I've ever felt that.
Right, and that's a straw man argument that people are making. We're not pulling for Wake Forest to win.
Rooting hard for us to win.
I was
clapping every time we made shots. I was cheering. I was chanting defense when we were on defense.
Yeah.
I was not pulling for us to lose.
To me, we're not pulling to lose. When we lose, we say it's one step closer to a better.
We're seeing the positive.
A better future to Wake Forest. And honestly, if Ron Lohman is going to look at one game and say, and that's what it is. It's one game that we blew a 16-point lead and we lost. I mean, that's a bad loss. If he can look at it and say, "Oh, we went 6-12 instead of 5-13, we should keep him," then I don't know what to tell
you. And I don't know what to say about that logic.
Right.
Besides the fact that it's illogical.
Right. You have to look at the body of work. And at this point, no game is going to save him. And no one game is going to save him.
Unless it's ACC championship.
Right. Isn't one game. He's won probably three to get there at this point. And
yeah,
I mean,
so that would really just be a four-game sample size, and that's another good point. And, you know, he's now won just 48 games, and granted, he hasn't finished his fourth season. Nick Saban's won 46 in the same time span. By the way, he coaches football.
Yeah.
Where we have at most 14 games a year if they make the SEC championship and the bowl game.
I mean, yeah, it's just, if you can't see the writing on the wall right now, I know that Jeff Petzold's not a good coach. I've watched him for 4 years. I don't need the result of one individual game to tell me that. Win or lose, we could go out and blow out Duke by 100 points, and I still wouldn't think Jeff Petzold was a good coach.
No, I would chalk that up to an aberration in a one-game sample size.
Yeah, and I mean, so all these guys that are saying, the ones I can't stand are saying that it's the lunatic fringe that want Jeff Petzold. No, it's not.
No, it's logic. I mean, my mother doesn't like Jeff Buzdelic.
Yeah.
I mean, because
she likes everybody.
And she sees what's – I mean, every Wake fan I talk to, every ACC fan I talk to says, what is going on with them? Because
– people pity us for being fans of Wake Forest.
People can't believe what's going on. And it's incredible the attendance we still have. I looked at the attendance on Saturday. Student attendance was only but so great. But, I mean, I was surprised it wasn't lower, to be honest. A Saturday night with parties to go to coming off a four-game
first of all, who scheduled a Wake Forest State game for 8 o'clock?
Yeah, I'm
on a Saturday.
I'm not certain. But, you know, the point is, I mean, there were still a fair number of fans there. And, Riley, I'm certainly not throwing you under the bus for visiting
It was the first one I missed in 15
for visiting your girlfriend on Valentine's Day weekend. I'm certainly not saying that. It's just our fan base we hear the talk about fourth in attendance last year. Well, my God, if we were fourth in attendance last year, think about what will happen when you get competence. I mean, the support is unbelievable. It's very impressive to me that as many people are still going to the games. And you know what? We can talk about the lunatic fringe from some of these media people that talk about the lunatic fringe. The lunatic fringe still cares a heck of a lot about Wake Forest basketball. They love Wake Forest basketball.
The lunatic fringe
are
the
apathetic.
The lunatic fringe are the Buzz supporters.
At this point, they are. You have to be.
Okay.
It's illogical. And you know what? After last year, I would have said, okay, I highly disagree with your point. But okay, we'll see what happens this year. But now it's just, you're just wrong. You know, it comes to the point where
yes,
you may have a different opinion. Now you're arguing against complete fact. And it is what it is at this point. he has done a miserable job. He is terrible at every single facet of his job. He is the head of a program, and he lacks leadership. He lacks X's and O's ability. He lacks recruiting ability. He's a terrible he is our most public representative of Wake Forest University, and he is a terrible one.
Yeah, I mean, that's the
I'm sorry if that's harsh.
No.
But that's the reality of the situation.
No, I mean, the thing that gets me is he is one of the most... People are like, well, why do you get so worked up about it? Because he is one of the most visible representatives of Wake Forest University.
Yeah. President Hatch is an infinitely better representative of Wake Forest University. I think he's done a fine job. Guess what? He's not on ESPN on the sidelines all the time. You know,
yeah.
They don't see him. They see Buzdelic. It's infuriating.
Yeah, and I mean, another kind of going off, people feel bad for Jeff Buzdelic. He's been paid $4 million over the last 3.5 years.
I have no pity for Jeff Buzdelic.
$4 million? You could... I would do unspeakable things for $4 million.
He's probably been paid a little bit more than $4 million. And it's absolutely asinine. It's... we talk about tax dollars at work. You know, thank God we're not a public school, because I guess all the money would be private anyway. But, I mean, that would be a waste of tax dollars if I've ever seen it.
And a lot of times I've started applying the things that Jeff Buzdelic says about his players to things that if Boss has said in the real world. And would they get fired if they told – if their boss heard them saying these excuses that he's coming up with in the real world? Well, Riley, why didn't you get so-and-so done today? Or why didn't you make sure these people did this? Oh, well, you'll have to ask them. My boss would say, excuse me?
He is – bosses are responsible for their subordinates,
yes.
The people who report to them, okay? My boss would never say, you'll have to ask him, okay? First of all, my boss is a far better leader than Jeff Buzdelic, because you know what? He has ownership if something wrong happens. I've never seen a leader with less accountability, and he is a horrendous leader. Forget basketball. He is a horrendous leader of young men. He is a terrible example to these young men. And I hope that these young men get a better person to learn from over the next 4 years. I think it's highly impressive that Travis McKay continues to show the most leadership on the team. He has some of the best quotes on the team with talks about owning up to things and taking responsibility. And to me, that just tells me that Travis McKay came from a wonderful household, I can assume, and was raised in a way to accept responsibility for your actions. And again, Travis McKay continues to stand out because he is the opposite of his head coach in that he accepts responsibility for his actions and his head coach does not.
Yeah, and that's what it comes down to. And, I mean, it really is funny when you just think about the comments that he's making. I mean, what if...
He told a Miami fan to go F off.
Yeah, I mean...
Unacceptable behavior.
Yeah, especially when it comes... And I talked a little bit about that on Twitter today. You know, Ron Wallman, he developed a straw man argument in terms of culture and winning the right way, because nobody knows what that means.
Duke wins the right way.
Right. But winning differently, I mean, winning the right way is different for every team.
Just win.
Yeah, win and have people that
don't break the law.
Right, that compete in the classroom and on the court. That's all we need.
I don't need Rhodes Scholars. I need people trying hard.
And going back to, you know, the lunatic fringe that thinks Buzdelic isn't doing a good job, is Dan Collins the lunatic fringe? Because here Collins
is going in.
I mean, I am verbatim what he wrote in his, I think this was his Winston-Salem Journal article in the game. Based on what I've seen in Wake's 4 games this month, Athletics Director Ron Wallman won't have to make the call on who will be coaching his basketball program next season. The Deacons are doing their dead-level best to make it for him. And given that they've lost 5 in a row and 8 of the last 11, that's about all they're doing well.
And look, I won't say President Hatch needs to step in and things like that because you know, if Wallman's going to make the next hire, I think he's somewhat overly criticized. But, obviously, it was a miserable, miserable hire. If Ron Wilman says to Nathan Hatch, yes, I'm going to keep Jeff Pastelic. Well, then, if I'm Nathan Hatch, I need to fire Ron Wilman.
Yeah, I mean...
I mean, there's no argument in the world to be made to keep him. He needs to be gone. Anything else left to say on this subject? I could go all night
on this subject because it's something that we're both passionate about. We understand that Wake Forest can and they deserve better. They are better than this. And
The fans deserve better. They absolutely do.
And it's gotten to the point where, you know, the players are blaming the fans. The coach is kind of blaming the fans. The media understands for the most part that Jeff Pastelic has done a poor job. But, I mean, you've still got some people out there.
That's leadership, that's pointing fingers.
I mean, I'm not going to name names.
Look in the mirror.
But people think that the lunatic fringe is the problem with Wake Forest. No, the problem with Wake Forest basketball is that Jeff Pastelic is still the head coach.
Absolutely.
Bar none.
Absolutely.
And I'm not taking accountability off the players because I think there's a lot there, too, in terms of...
Because they do play the game.
Yeah, yes. Like Cody Miller-McIntyre said last night, which I'll give him respect for, he said, you know, what fans and critics get confused about is blaming a coach, and a coach can't get on the court and make good passes for you. A coach can't rebound for you. I think it's rare that we've ever gotten out coach, which I blame.
I disagree with, but I respect the heck out of that statement. And how many times do you hear Jeff Pastelic say, well, you'll have to ask them?
Right.
Perfect opportunity for Cody Miller-McIntyre to throw his coach under the bus and say, we're not being put in position to succeed, which they're not. He takes the high road.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, it's the 18 to 22-year-old acting like a 60-year-old and the 60-year-old acting like a 4-year-old in terms of throwing people under the bus. I mean, and you know, this is the first time. And we said at the beginning we were going to be fair in assessing Jeff Pastelic.
Well, we've been more than fair.
I do think we've been more than fair. So it is coming out a little more just tonight. I'm sure we've been going on for about 10 minutes. But, I mean, it has to be said. And it's not really that we're continuing to say this over and over again because nothing has changed yet. So, I mean, until something changes, I'll continue to say over and over again what we've done wrong. So, anyway, we've got two more road games coming up this week. exciting. At Maryland on Tuesday night, KenPom gives us a 19% chance.
That's about 19 too high.
And then we're at UNC, who's won 6 in a row on Saturday at noon. Rob and I were talking about going down there, but I think we'll probably
pass
on this
one. We'll go to B-Dust or something.
Yeah, and, we have about a 12% chance to win this one. So
about 12 too high again.
So 31% over our next two games. They're two road games. And, you know, honestly, I don't really feel like breaking each one of them down. I think neither one of them.
We're going to be losers of 7 straight. Maryland, very impressive performance against Duke on Saturday. Charles Mitchell shot. The gods of Cameron. The rims, I guess, are only but so soft when they want to be in the Cameron rims. And his shot did not fall. Mark Turgeon had a pretty impressive vertical there. But I guess it's the Under Armour costing the speed skating team and the Olympics costing the Maryland basketball team, whatever it is. So not a great week for Under Armour. But, you know, what can you say about the game? Last trip to College Park. Any other thoughts on this one?
Nah, I mean, I think we need to figure out a way to stop ball, especially when Des Wells has it. He's a very good player, and he demonstrated that last night against Duke. You know, I felt almost bad for Maryland last night because I thought they played a really, really good game against Duke, and I thought they, you know, I thought that shot was going to fall for Charles Mitchell. But alas, it didn't. I think we're going to have a hard time with Wells and Seth Allen and, what is it, Smotrich?
Evan Smotrich?
Yes. I think we'll have a hard time defending him. And we need Devin Thomas to step up big against Charles Mitchell because Mitchell's been playing well lately. And
yeah, very
good
rebounder.
So, I mean, that's about all I have to say. I think it's going to be rough to come out there with a win. Our three-point defense continues to be
exploited.
Well, and here's the thing. It's actually 20th in the nation still. And I don't really understand how. It's kind of weird. I think it's going to be tough to come out of College Park with a victory. And it's not really – the path not getting easier for us by anymore. So that's about all I have to say about that.
I mean, it's going to come down to rebounding. The bottom line is they rebound the ball far better than we do. And we're just not going to get enough opportunities to score. And
it is what it is. It's going to be another road loss and extend the record to 2-30.
Yeah, and then we head to Chapel Hill on Saturday, straight down 40. Hopefully we get that there's a snowstorm. We plan it better than Duke did this past week to go ahead and get in there.
Hey, it's a deceptively long 8 miles, Riley.
It's treacherous, I've heard. So we beat Carolina first go-around, 73-67. We're two teams heading in the opposite direction. The only chance I think that we have is that UNC looks ahead. Well, not looks ahead, kind of. They're at Florida State Monday. They get Duke on Thursday, and then get us on Saturday. So maybe coming off a high against Duke or a loss, and then they don't rebound very well. James Michael McAdoo's come alive, and he's been really good. He's been really good the past month and a half or so. And I mean,
keeps dunking off the wrong foot, but it keeps going in.
I made a lot of fun of him, but I'll give credit where credit's due. He's looked very good.
We were objective. I mean, a solid offensive rating of 105 now. Good rebounding numbers. So with the high usage rate, we give him credit when players are playing well. Credit to James Michael Mack.
Absolutely.
Getting to the line well. Carolina rest, but getting to the line well.
Yeah, so that's going to be another tough game for us. We're not going on the road. They're pretty good at home. I think they've won, like I said, 6 in a row. Could be 8. And if they've won 8 in a row, those are 8 very good wins. So
yeah. 16th best offensive rebounding percentage team in the nation. And 12th best adjusted defense. I mean, we're going to struggle to score against them. They're going to dictate pace, and we're not going to rebound against them. So their length's going to be an issue. It's just going to be an issue all day.
Yeah, so I think...
What else can I say?
It's another tough week on the road, and if we don't get a win here, that's going to be 7 in a row. Then we get Clemson and Boston College the next week. Like Rob said, I think we have a 1.9% chance to win. The rest of the way with 6 games remaining, which obviously isn't very good.
What did you tell me? 1.95 expected wins?
Yes, yeah, and just kind of, I don't want to harp on this, but this was kind of a thing that we were talking about beforehand. Jeff Pozdelic is now 5-30 in February and March.
Critical months for college basketball.
Yes, and this is especially critical because in the press conference for Dino Gaudio's firing and the subsequent hiring of Jeff Pozdelic, it was just pointed out directly that February and March record was one of the reasons that Gaudio was fired. Now, I don't believe that. I think there was a lot more going on. Maybe that was something, maybe the thing that pushed it over the top. But what Dino Gaudio was what?
In 2007, 2008, so his first season, he went 4-7.
Okay.
In 08, 09, the year we were number one in the country, and then a eventual four seed, we went 7-5, which, again, isn't too bad. Then 09, 2010, we were a 9 seed, beat Texas, we went 6-6.
Okay.
So 17-18 during that time stretch, which it isn't great, but you know it's not terrible either, especially considering that he was 4-7 his first year, and then had one game above 500 the next year, and you know the loss in 2010 was to Kentucky, a team that had John Wall, DeMarcus, I mean a loaded Kentucky team.
Yeah.
But Jeff Pozdelic is 5-30.
Yeah, and I mean 17-18
over February and March.
Right. I mean, and so that's one thing that you know if you're looking at things to point to that Ron Wallman's looking for, and I mean, this is really big, boiling it down to, well, you said you were looking for this, you hired this, this is the result. I mean, you said you're looking for a win in February and March, you hired Jeff Pozdelic to win in February and March, he's 5-30.
He's not winning in November, December, or January either, but he's certainly not winning in February and March.
Right, I mean, that's 25 games under 500, and that's against the meat of the schedule. That's
0-11, 2-7, 3-8, 0-4 so far. Not getting it done.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's one thing that, you know, people can really point to and say, look, he's not getting the job done even by Ron Wallman's standards. And that's why that's one of those things that I think could be looked at. Just another stat we wanted to point out to kind of indicate that...
we're objective here. We're pointing out stats.
Right, that Jeff Pozdelic maybe hasn't done what was expected of him. So, I think we spent pretty much long enough on this podcast, Rob. You know, it's a disappointing week for the Deeks. Disappointing season overall. We haven't seen as much improvement as we thought we would like to have seen. So, any final thoughts?
No final thoughts. I mean, obviously we're going to continue rooting for them, continue watching them, continue to support the players because we love the players.
I guess just one final observation was towards the end of the game on Saturday night. It was out of reach, but we had multiple inbounds plays, and we were completely discombobulated. You know, we had several players start moving before the ball came, and I know sometimes that can be a design of the play, but the players didn't seem to realize when the inbounder was handed the basketball, and normally that's a cue for when to go. You don't want to necessarily wait until you slap the ball, because then a second has passed and closer to the 5-second violation. But that was just another example of lack of execution. And you know what? I don't care time or score. Obviously, time and score is important, but you want to execute regardless of the situation. And that was just an example of potentially a team, I don't know, checking out, disinterested, or confused.
Yeah, I mean,
that's coaching.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree. It seems like the team really overall has been really disinterested at times. You know, they're not putting a lot of trust in the process. And, you know, from the beginning, Jeff Bedelic said this year was about wins. But, you know, when you're still this far away from being an NCAA tournament team, you have to look at process. You have to take every single game situation and use it as if it were the Final Four and you were trying to win it. We obviously weren't doing that last night, and that does point it back to coaching. So, I mean, I think that we said about all we need to say, and hopefully they surprise us. We'll get a win against Maryland, UNC. I mean, we're still pulling for the team to win.
Yeah, and you predict we lose both of those games. I know we
didn't. I don't like our odds on the road.
Okay.
Despite, I said I thought we'd go 1-1 this week. I was incorrect. I believe
you're almost looking really good for the Florida State game.
I said we'd beat State and lose to Florida State, so I.
You said we'd win one of them, so I assume you would have just changed your mind midweek. But
yeah,
that's okay.
I was completely wrong. So we appreciate you listening. If you're still listening, hopefully this will continue to generate a lot of hits. We've had a lot of success over the past few weeks in Roll the Quadcast. We appreciate you listening every week, guys. And as always, go Deeks.
Go Deeks.